All right, let's dive into a case that's still shaking things up, legally speaking. Board of Education v. Allen. Picture this. 1968, the government's giving textbooks to kids in religious schools. Sounds pretty straightforward, right?
I think so.
But this seemingly small thing, it blew up into this huge legal fight, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it brought up these fundamental questions about separating church and state. And we are still, to this day, grappling with those.
And that's what's so interesting about this case. It's not just some, you know, thing of the past. It's a major building block for how we deal with education law. Like, it shapes how we view everything from those school vouchers to funding religious institutions even now in the 21st century. It's a perfect example of how something that seems totally simple on the surface can have these huge and long-lasting effects.
Okay, so let's set the scene. New York State, they passed this law,
right?
And it says public schools got to lend textbooks to all students, grades 7 through 12.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if they're going to a public school or a private religious school.
All students.
All students. But the books got to be secular, the same ones used in the public schools. Sounds like a pretty fair system when you think about it.
Yeah, but here's where things get a little tricky. Those who opposed the law, they were like, hold on, even this indirect aid, like, they're not giving money directly to the schools. They're giving books to the kids. That's still violating the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. You know, the whole Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion.
Yeah.
They saw it as the government basically putting a stamp of approval on religion, even if the books themselves weren't religious.
Oh, that classic tension. Government, religion, always trying to figure out where one ends and the other begins. So how did this whole thing, this legal battle, how did it start to play out?
Well, some parents and taxpayers, they weren't having it. They got together and filed a lawsuit against the Board of Education, saying, straight up, this law, unconstitutional.
Makes sense.
And then the case, it starts bouncing around the lower courts, right? And as you can imagine, different courts had different opinions. Some were all for the law. They were focusing on how it helps all students, you know, level playing field. But then others, they saw it as the government going too far in supporting religious institutions. All this back and forth really shows you just how complicated this issue was and how many different perspectives were out there.
You can practically feel the legal system just wrestling with this huge question. Okay, we got to help students, but we also got to keep that separation of church and state. So how did the Supreme Court finally rule? What did they say about this whole textbook thing?
Well, ultimately, the case, it lands at the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court. And it's important to point out here that the court already had some experience dealing with these sorts of church and state questions. Like, there was that case, Everson v. Board of Education, back in 1947.
Oh, I remember that one.
That dealt with whether it was okay to use public money to bus kids to religious schools. So they'd already waded into these murky waters before.
So there was some precedent, some history for them to consider. Okay, so what happened? What was the final outcome in Board of Education v. Allen?
All right, so in a 6-3 decision.
6-3, okay.
The Supreme Court decided to uphold the New York law. They basically said that giving secular textbooks to all students didn't matter if they were in public or religious schools, it didn't go against that establishment clause.
So their thinking was it's more about helping the students, not the religious schools themselves. Was that like their main point?
You got it. The court really hammered home the neutrality of the law. Like, hey, it benefits everybody equally. And the textbooks, not religious. It's all about making things fair for all students, no matter what school they choose.
Yeah, I can see the logic there. But I'm guessing this wasn't a unanimous decision, right? Were there judges who disagreed?
Oh, absolutely. And these dissenting voices, they're actually super important because they kind of foreshadow a lot of the debates we're still having today about the government, funding, and religious schools. Three justices, they were like, nope, not on board.
Okay, spill the tea. What were they so worried about? Why did they think this seemingly neutral textbook thing was a bad idea?
Well, Justice Black, he was probably the most outspoken against the law. Like, he saw it as a straight up violation of the separation of church and state. He went back to what the founding fathers intended, you know, this wall between government and religion.
A wall, right.
And he was worried about what this decision could lead to. If the government can give textbooks, what's next? Funding buildings, paying teacher salaries. His concern was that this would just open the floodgates to more and more government involvement in religion.
I see his point. It's like he was worried about setting a dangerous precedent that could chip away at that separation of church and state. What about the other justices who disagreed? Did they have similar concerns, or were they coming at it from different angles?
Justice Douglas, he had a different worry. He was focused on the content of the textbooks.
Okay.
He was like, even if the books themselves aren't super religious, there could still be bias, like in how they're chosen or even in the stuff they teach.
Ah, so he was more concerned about like hidden agendas or perspectives sneaking in, even in books that are supposed to be neutral. It makes you wonder, how do you even make sure that educational materials are totally free from religious influence?
Yeah, that's a big question, right? Gets right to the heart of what a secular education even means.
Right.
And then we have Justice Fortas. He had another interesting take. He basically said, textbooks, they're not the same as buses. Remember that Everson case with the bus transportation?
Yeah, the court said that was okay.
Right. So Fortas is saying textbooks are different.
I'm listening. Why do you think textbooks were different from buses?
He saw buses as just a way to get kids to school. Purely practical, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
But textbooks, Fortas said those are tools for teaching. They're directly connected to a school's whole philosophy of education. He was basically saying giving textbooks is closer to, like, messing with the curriculum itself, which could be seen as getting way too involved with religious instruction.
That's a really interesting point. It makes you think about all the subtle ways the government could influence a religious school's teaching just by giving them stuff.
Yeah.
So we have these three justices all raising different but valid concerns, right?
Yeah.
But in the end, the majority ruled in favor of the textbook law. It seems like even within the court's decision, there's a lot to unpack, a lot of nuance.
Totally agree. And that's where Justice Harlan's opinion comes in. He's kind of a wild card here.
Oh.
He agreed with the majority, said the law was okay, but he added something important, a little caveat that would end up having a big impact later on.
I'm all ears. What was it? What did Justice Harlan say?
He introduced this idea of entanglement. He said, yeah, giving secular textbooks might be okay in this specific case, but the government needs to be super careful about getting too involved in religious matters. It was like he was drawing a line in the sand. Too much entanglement between the government and religion that's going to cause constitutional problems.
So even though he voted with the majority, he was kind of like, hey, watch your step.
Yeah.
Trying to find that balance, right? Support education, but don't cross that church-state line.
Exactly. And that whole entanglement idea, it became a huge part of the famous Lemon test. You know, the one the court came up with a few years later in Lemon v. Kurtzman.
Oh, yeah, 1971.
Right. That test was meant to help figure out if a law was violating the Establishment Clause and entanglement. That was one of the main things they looked at.
Wow. So this textbook case basically set the stage for a whole new legal test that would be used in tons of other cases about religion and government. It's amazing how one case can have such a ripple effect.
For sure. It shows you how legal precedents all connect, how one case builds on another. Board of Education v. Allen didn't just settle this textbook thing. It set off this chain reaction of legal stuff that's still shaping how we view the relationship between the government and religion here in the U.S.
It's a good reminder that legal decisions, they don't just exist in isolation. It's like this big web, right? With precedents and principles that guide future courts. But let's talk about today. How does this case, decided back in 68, how is it affecting education policy now, over 50 years later?
One of the biggest places we see its legacy is in the fight over school vouchers, you know, where parents can use public money to send their kids to private schools, including religious ones.
It's like that slippery slope Justice Black was warning about back then is actually happening now. So how do the people for and against school vouchers, how do they use Board of Education v. Allen in their arguments?
Well, both sides use it. They both point to this case to try and back up their positions.
So everyone's cherry picking, huh?
Kind of, yeah. Opponents of vouchers, they often use Board of Education v. Allen as a cautionary tale. They're like, see, this is what happens. This case opened the door for directly funding religious schools. They worry vouchers will break down that separation of church and state and that public money will end up supporting religious teaching.
So they see it as the first step toward too much government involvement in religion, especially when it comes to education.
Right. But the people who like school vouchers, they have a different take. They say Board of Education v. Allen showed that parents should be able to choose what kind of education they want for their kids. It's about choice, they argue.
I get it. They're saying if parents want their kids to have a religious education, they should be able to use public funds to do that.
Yep, that's the argument. So yeah, Board of Education v. Allen has become this touchstone, this central point of reference for both sides of the school voucher debate, which, as you know, can get pretty heated.
Absolutely. It's not just about vouchers, though, right? Are there other areas where we see the impact of this case today?
Oh, for sure. It's not just vouchers. Board of Education v. Allen comes up whenever people talk about the government helping religious schools in all sorts of ways.
Like what? What kind of things?
Well, think about technology, computers, software. Or special education services, you know, helping kids with disabilities. Or even just funding to build new schools or fix up old ones. Every time those things come up, people end up talking about Board of Education v. Allen. The courts use it to try and figure out, okay, when is it okay to help, and when does it cross that line into too much entanglement, like Harlan was talking about.
So Board of Education v. Allen basically gave us a framework, like a set of guidelines, for thinking about these complicated questions.
Yeah.
But it doesn't just give us a simple yes or no answer, right? It's more like, here are some principles, now go figure it out.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And that's why people still argue about it so much. You've got this fundamental tension. We want all kids to have a good education, but we also want to respect everyone's religious freedom. And at the same time, we have to keep that separation of church and state.
Right. Yeah.
There are good arguments on all sides. And finding that sweet spot, that balance, it's really tough, legally and just, in our society as a whole.
It just shows you that these legal precedents, they're not set in stone. They change and get reinterpreted as we face new situations.
Totally.
Board of Education v. Allen was decided over 50 years ago, but it's still incredibly relevant today. It's still part of all these debates about religion and education that are happening right now.
Absolutely. And it shows us how important it is to really understand these issues, because they're not just abstract legal theories. They actually affect real people, families, students, entire communities. Board of Education v. Allen, it's like this reminder that what happens in the courtroom can have a huge impact on our schools and on our society as a whole.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, here's something for everyone to think about. Board of Education v. Allen started with something so ordinary, so basic, textbooks, but it ended raising all these big, messy, complex questions about the relationship between government and religion, especially when it comes to education.
And those questions are still with us today. This case is a reminder that we need to keep thinking critically, keep talking about these issues. How do we support all students? How do we protect religious freedom? And where do we draw that line between church and state, especially when it comes to something as important as education?
That's all for today's deep dive into Board of Education v. Allen. Hopefully this episode gave everyone a better understanding of this landmark case and how it continues to shape the intersection of education, religion, and the law.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time.